Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this latest episode of the Sports is Life podcast. And I mean, I think for the entire basketball community, the entire sports community, these last 20 or 36 hours have been
surreal.
Yeah, hard to digest.
The nightmare that you keep thinking you're going to wake up from.
I still feel like that, yeah. I think I couldn't sleep last night.
I think I stayed up until I was so tired I had to sleep.
But yesterday, there was a helicopter crash up in the Calabasas Mountains in Los Angeles. And, of course, among the 9 victims was one Kobe Bean Bryant and his daughter, Gianna. And I mean, this is just, I think from us being sports consumers, we haven't, this is probably the most, this is the biggest death of somebody like that is not, you know, in old age and
right,
that somebody might succumb to like natural causes. Like, this is a man who was basically getting ready to start the second chapter of his career.
Like, but not even like start. I mean, I think he was like well into what he wanted his second act to be. You know, I think he knew that direction and where he was going with it. And he was a man that, I think I heard somebody say today, like, he was a man that seemed happier now than he might have seemed while we saw him playing. Like, just so comfortable in this next stage. And for athletes, that transition from playing to retirement is not something that always goes smoothly.
Yeah. I think everybody who has talked about this on TV, sports personalities, everybody that has talked about this in print, whether it's Twitter, newspapers, whatever, I think the overwhelming similarity to everybody's reaction was disbelief.
Shock.
Denial. I got a couple of my friends had a group chat. One of them put in there, is like, I think Kobe just died in a helicopter crash, and everybody was like, nah.
like the first reaction was like, nah. We were in the car, and my husband shows me this TMZ headline. I'm like, what? That's not true. What's TMZ doing? Like, that was, mind you, TMZ isn't often wrong. That's the part that I, like, the whole time I'm like, no, that's not true.
They're just going to be very messy about it.
Yes, they're always messy. Always messy. But they don't usually get it wrong. And that was the rub that I had a hard time with, because, of course, ESPN hasn't said anything. You know, Lakers are my favorite team. So I get updates on LeBron's kid obsessively from ESPN. So I don't have an update from them. So it can't possibly be right.
And then all of a sudden, just confirming, then it just, all the details, like every 10 minutes, new details popped up. It was just, yep. It was him. Then, oh, his daughters were on board. Then it's like, it's 5 people. Then it became 9. Then it's just like.
I will say this, once again, to the media, when tragedy strikes, it is better to be right than first. And all of the outlets forgot that once again. I don't know how we keep forgetting this. It seems very basic to me, but we do.
As a basketball player, I wasn't really a fan of Kobe at the beginning.
So I've been a Kobe fan since I was in middle school. Like, I was fascinated by the fact that a 17-year-old was entering the league. Like, I remember, like, him going to prom with Brandy. Like, I remember doodling, like, I Heart Kobe on notebooks. It was kind of like a cross between he's my favorite player and I have a crush on him, but I don't think I ever really considered him a crush.
And we all saw him when he took Brandy to prom.
Exactly. Like, I am not a Laker fan. I am a Kobe fan, and therefore I am a Laker fan, if that makes any sense. I like, in the same breath, used to be like, I hate the Lakers, but I love Kobe. Like, that used to be kind of the cross between. Go back in the archives to hear how I ended up a Laker fan, because it really just became, I became a Laker fan because the Magic broke my heart one time too many. But anyways, yes, Smiley was not a Kobe fan. I remember fighting with him and one of our other friends because they both could not stand Kobe, and I loved him.
But I will say, I grew to, as with most people who said that they didn't like Kobe, you grew to respect the way he went about his business and the ultimate competitor that he was. Had that innate killer instinct that not many players have. And it didn't matter what the deal was. He was going to bring his stuff every single night. Even when he tore his Achilles and got up and shot those two free throws and got finished after that. Whether it was the, or his 60-point farewell game, which, look, I ain't gonna lie. I fell asleep, like, early that night because I was like, all right, I'm going to set my alarm and wake up around the middle of the fourth quarter because the Lakers weren't that good. So I was like, they probably going to get blown out. I'll wake up and watch his, like, you know, his send-off. I wake up a little bit later than I expected it to, and I turn on the TV, and he just hit the free throw for 60, and I'm like, wait, what? And there was no, yeah, there was no way you weren't going to tell Kobe that he was going to shoot every single time he got the ball in that last game.
Right. I mean, you weren't going to tell Kobe he wasn't going to shoot most times he had the ball at any point in his career. That is the definition of Kobe Bryant. But you most definitely weren't going to tell him on his last night. I feel like other moments that I will always remember. I remember the game 7 of the finals in 2010. And I just remember being like, he really is going to do anything he can to win this game. Like, he was off that night. Like, he just couldn't. We're sitting on the couch being like curled up in a ball, like so stressed out. And I just remember being like, if they lose this, I'm going to be, this is going to be so depressing. And he definitely could not. I mean, he was, whew, but it was like he was going to do anything. Like, he was going to get every loose ball. He was going to play defense on a level that he was going to give every bit of himself. You were not going to be able to be like, well, he had an off game, but you on somehow think that he didn't leave it all on the court. That was not going to be the final solution to this. Like, that just wasn't going to be it.
Fortunately, both of us had the opportunity to see him live when I went for my Jeopardy trip. The day I arrived, fortunately, they were playing the Nuggets. It just so happened to be like 3 weeks or a month before he announced that he was going to retire at the end of the season. So thankfully for me, I was able to get some good tickets. It was a very interesting. He definitely has the most love-hate relationship with Lakers fans ever. Because the Lakers weren't that good at the beginning of the season, and Denver was straight blitzing them. And he had the ball, and every time he had the ball, I could see Lakers fans yelling, shoot it, shoot it. And he airballed like 3 or 4 threes. So they would be like, shoot it. And then he airballed it like, Kobe, what the hell are you doing? I was like, yo, man, y'all just told this man to shoot it. What the deal? Yeah, I got a picture with, they had like some cardboard cutouts of the starting lineup outside the arena. So I got a picture with my arm around him. He made a joke that he was the 200th best NBA player at the time because he was going through a rut.
Yeah, he was going through a rut car coming back from an Achilles injury. I went, and it wasn't, I went because a friend of mine won tickets like at an internal company event. And I actually saw him in Orlando. I did not see him in LA. I've never been to the Staples Center, but yeah, I saw him then. And honestly, like, I remember it, but it was definitely not something that was burned into my memory, which now I kind of wish it was, but I guess it's one of those things where at least I know I saw him. play.
My favorite Kobe quote was when a reporter asked him, it might have been the finals against the Celtics when they blew out the Lakers, and somebody asked him, you know, what do you take from this game? Or how do you just move on to the next game? And he told the reporter, it was like, when you take a dunk, you don't stand up and look at it and say, oh, that's a nice crap. You flush it, and then you go on about your business. So it's like,
right,
Kobe, that's the realest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It also is really indicative of, like, how Kobe thought. And
the Mamba mentality.
Right. Just how he was he's one of the few superstars that you never really felt like he was kind of doing the, like, talking points talk. Like, I think you always felt like you heard, like, what he actually thought. Like, yeah, he didn't tell us everything because that would be ridiculous. But, like, I never felt like with Kobe, I was listening to a bunch of, like, talking points. He did not talk like Russell Wilson, I guess, was what I'm saying. There was always a genuineness to what he was saying. And I think that was in part because he so often made comments like the one Smiley just made, where it was just like, there's something, nobody would have ever written that talking point for you. But that's how I know that's how you feel right at this moment, you know? Or he wore and he carried the emotion that I think fans wanted to see from their athletes, right? I think there's always sometimes fans don't feel like athletes care enough or coaches care enough. You know what I mean? And their reactions don't reflect the fans' reaction, right? And I think that in a lot of ways, Kobe's more closely reflected that because he just hated to lose. And I think fans are like that, and that's what they want to see. But so many, many players just don't. That's not where their heads are at, you know? And not from a good or a bad perspective. It's just from a, this is work, I got to do it, you know?
Trust me, we could go on and on about everything that has happened throughout the course of his career. You know, obviously the down times, the Colorado trip, his beef with Shaq, the lost season with the Achilles. But, you know, in this point in time, we just going to remember those good memories, especially the ones that he provided most recently. Like, this man won an Oscar.
Right. Like, how crazy is that? Like, you know, I think that we hear so much about, like, what LeBron's doing outside of basketball and what so many, like, I think it's become really kind of the norm in the last few years to hear what these players are doing and as they prepare for, like, life after they finish playing their sport. But Kobe was one that you never heard anything that he was doing outside of basketball, because frankly, I'm not sure that anybody believed that Kobe was doing anything else outside of basketball.
Thankfully, he stopped rapping. Perhaps the most heartbreaking piece about this whole story is the fact that Kobe was with his 13-year-old daughter, Gianna, heading to his camp for tournament games. Or the other victims in this crash were Gianna's teammates, fellow parents of those young girls, a coach for one of Kobe's academies. It probably speaks more to his purpose in life as it was just recently, as being probably being one of the biggest NBA superstars that was a real champion for women's sports.
Yep.
And that manifested itself in how he coached his daughter. Gianna's love for basketball, I guess, reinvigorated, because he was ready to just slide off into the sunset.
Yep. He was definitely ready to do kind of all the things that he wanted to do and really unleash his creativity. And there might have been basketball elements, but he was definitely not, like, he was not going to be the NBA, the former player who did everything he could to stay around
kind of the NBA game. He, like, you know, his Oscar winning animation was, it had something to do with basketball. Some of the books he's released, the young adult series has to do with basketball, but he was definitely okay with like creating and the media company and not being like around the game. He wasn't going to be the player that was like, you know, commentating a ton or, you know, doing all those things. He was okay with kind of still being distant and kind of showing up occasionally, but not needing to be part of kind of the greater NBA family. That was until his little girl said she wanted to.
Yeah, and they, you know, you could catch them at a bunch of WNBA games. He went to college games, him and Oregon basketball star Sabrina Ionescu became really close. I think Gianna was pretty much set on going to UConn.
Although there was some talk about how Oregon could lure her away because of that relationship and the time they spent at Oregon. But she was also 13. I think at this point, the only thing she knew was she wanted to play in the WNBA. And she wanted to carry on her father's legacy. There was this, Jimmy Kimmel was asking him about, you know, his daughter and basketball. And like, they're like, does she want to play in the NBA? And he was like, absolutely she does. And you were just like, there was so much animation in his face. And he said it, he was so sure of it. And, you know, he was joking about how the best thing was like when fans come up to him and they say like, he needs to have a boy so that they can continue his legacy. First of all, can I just say this? You don't get to walk up to somebody else on the planet and say, tell them that they should have a child so they can continue a legacy. Like, first of all, fans, you're stepping over the line. Number one, don't do that. But also with his daughter standing next to him, handle your life.
But Gianna put him in a place.
Immediately. It was like, I got this. I'll continue the legacy. Like, and it, I think as a parent, that is something that you want for your children. You want them to find their purpose, their destiny, what they want to do, the thing that they want to work hard for. Because I think, you know, there's so many things that go on with kids that it's hard sometimes to help your kids want to work hard for things, right? That they want to step into that purpose. There's so many distractions. And that's what, as a parent, you want them to find so they can have purpose and direction in their lives. And to see her find it at 13, find it at a young age, and then have a dad that could teach her and guide her through that, she could have been the person that changed the WNBA. And that's a changed it. Like, the women that are currently there aren't making amazing strides. But her family's like his legacy, her and the WNBA, that had potential that we'll never see realized. I think on some level, that's probably the saddest part. Not like losing Kobe is such a blow, but the fact that his little girl was there too, the fact that a family is grieving a husband, a father, and a daughter and a sister, like that. I said I wasn't going to cry during this episode. I have now officially failed.
I don't have kids yet, and a lot of people have harped on, you know, whatever their last moments were and however they handled it. And I can only assume, like, holding his daughter, knowing that there was probably nothing that he could do at that point in time to, like, protect his daughter from what might have been imminent. It's just like, yeah, that's...
That's a parent's worst nightmare. Like, to know you can't protect your children. Like, you can't. Like, there's no way to.
You know, I had a classmate pass away my senior year of high school. He was like the captain of the football team. We had some good times together. At his funeral, they asked for people with remarks, and I swear, like, half of that cathedral got up and said something about him. And my mom, she told me something, and it still sticks with me today. She said, "You know how great a life someone lived based on what they said about you when you were gone." And I mean, millions upon millions, probably upon billions. Former NBA players, current NBA players, presidents, soccer players, like singers. It just...
The Grammys managed to find Boyz II Men to sing "It's So Hard to Say Goodbye." Like, within, what, an hour? That's showbiz magic, ladies and gentlemen. I think what's also really interesting, as we kind of see off the court, is that we see the impact that we didn't know he had. You know what I mean? Like, that's the part that I'm like, wait, there is more impact, and there are more stories of his kindness, of him mentoring players and helping players and all of these things. But not even that, just stories of him seeing people get in a car accident and helping out. Like, there are so many stories that you don't even, that we never heard about him. I think one of the stunning ones was like him and Shaq. The way they're talking about, the way he's talking about the story today, I'm like, was there ever really a beef? Like, was there ever really a beef? Like, or did we think there was more of a beef? Because you're not calling Gianna your niece. Your son is not calling Kobe his uncle. And it was just two people that have been beefing for 15 years. You know what I mean? Like, that's not how this works. So it's also like this layer has been pulled back, and so many people have all of these stories and all these. Michael Jordan being like, this, he's like a little brother to me. Did you see that coming? Because I didn't. I knew they were kind of cool, but like a little brother? These aren't things that you feel like you are really hearing about his relationships with people that we ever really heard. Because the way he was portrayed as a player was like, he didn't have time for nobody. He didn't like, or like, it was literally like Paul Gasol loved him. Lamar Odom loved him. Everybody else respected and kind of feared him. But there was never this like, nah, he was a mentor here. He's a, like, that didn't really, we never heard about that side of Kobe. Because Kobe was a player that was like, I'm not practicing with other players. What are you talking about?
I mean, hell, my last car, I named, like, my car Vino. And that was right around the time that he started referring to himself as Vino, because he thought he was aging like fine wine.
Oh, dear God. I cannot.
And, of course, I wasn't a big Kobe fan, but, you know, I was just like, all right, I dig it. Whatever.
I mean, I think if you watched any broadcast on him, like, people just look shocked. The number of people you see crying and not being able to make it through, like, I think that's that part is the visible grief that people are going through. The visible grief. Kyrie Irving just, like, literally just walking out the building. Yes. Just like, I'm done. Like, here's the news, and walks out. I don't know how people played yesterday.
I don't either.
Because you would literally see people standing there, staring off into space, not being able to hold back tears. Grown men that you would never expect to see cry, and nobody has said anything. I will say that part has impressed me, because, granted, I don't know what you gonna say. Like, but the number of people who are visibly grieving, like, visibly don't know what to say. That part, I'm like...
And look, we got All-Star game coming up.
It is going to be half a disaster. Like, and, I don't even know.
Look, if the Lakers don't win the title this year, like, I don't... I feel like now is divine intervention. They got to win now, right?
one, people were like, they should cancel games. And I was like, no, Kobe would never have wanted them to cancel games. Like, there's nothing in Kobe's spirit that would have wanted him to have any game canceled. They did cancel the Lakers' next home game, or postponed it. Lakers versus Clippers were supposed to be Tuesday night. That obviously is not happening any longer. So I don't know when that's going to happen.
I mean, their next home game after that is Friday against the Trailblazers. So Carmelo will be in town. And Carmelo and Kobe went at it in the playoffs when he played for the Nuggets. Like,
yes, yeah, he did. So this whole thing, I feel like, is just going to be so weird. But yeah, I feel like the only thing the Lakers can do is win a championship. Like, I feel like that's the only way you honor Kobe. Like, I don't even think that there's a way to do it otherwise. I'm not saying other teams shouldn't get out. I'm not saying other teams should get out the way, but the Lakers as an organization, y'all might as well go on a rip and just go ahead and just accept it. Go ahead and players just be expect not to rest. Just go do it.
And now he was one of the top nominees for this year's Hall of Fame class, but Basketball Hall of Fame said, yeah, the hell with that. We're just going to skip the particulars. He'll be there.
Which is crazy. Like, this would have been the year he was eligible.
Yeah, he'd be darn near unanimous. And this year's Hall of Fame class already is going to be the most ridiculous Hall of Fame class ever, because you got him, presumably Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett. It was like, okay, three players who went at each other for darn near 10 years straight. They're basically players that, you know, my generation has grown up watching.
Yeah, we're definitely in that stage of people making it to the Hall that, like, we remember. Like, we remember from their original playing days. I just feel like I feel like this is one that's just going to keep sitting with us. Like, you're going to put him in the Hall of Fame. The Lakers obviously still have to play the All-Star game. I mean, so many people suggested that, like, once I was 24 and once I was 8. Like, I just feel like we're going, I do feel like we're going to end up, this grieving process is going to be.
It's going to last a very, very long time.
Yeah. I think that this is, you know, I think that, you know, in a world where news cycles are very short, this one, I feel like it's going to stick with us.
Especially for the city of Los Angeles. Nipsey Hussle died not too long ago, and that hit the city of Los Angeles hard. And now another one, their adopted son. It's just crazy.
Yeah. And I also think that that's kind of some of the things that are crazy about this, is that how many players played for one team? I mean, that's kind of unheard of these days. But yeah, there really aren't players that do that anymore. But yeah, it is still kind of interesting to see. But like, as Smiley and I were talking about it, the NBA is a league that does not have a ton of attrition year to year. And there's only 450 players. And a lot of them start one day and play together for the equivalent of like K through 12 with the same people in the league. And I think sometimes we forget that about the NBA.
That's why they call it such a close-knit fraternity.
Yeah. I think that's why it's so much closer than what you would see is like the, like, why you see these players continue to have relationships long after they finish their time. What was it? Vince Carter. I was talking about his last conversation with Kobe was about retirement and about how Kobe was like, you will love retirement more than you think you will. And they were making plans to talk. Like, that kind of relationships, you don't see that, I guess, in football. I guess this is just one part of many. This is one of those moments where sports intersects life on such a granular level. I think this is also the outpouring of how this one player impacted so many people's lives is why sport is powerful. I think that's what I've been reminded of for the last couple of days, more than anything else. He wasn't a politician. He wasn't a champion of, you know, a captain of industry. He was a basketball player, but he touched people in ways that so many of those other people can't. And that is why sport is powerful.
We had to talk about this, obviously, because it's Super Bowl week. But on Sunday, the Chiefs take on the 49ers in Super Bowl Live, as I'm going to call it, because it's in Miami, and they make the logo out to be, you know, they're making it out to be a huge party on South Beach.
I mean, that's kind of what Super Bowl is anyway, so there's that. I guess we'll watch it. I am not excited about Super Bowl at all.
I'm not either, but in the year of the black quarterback, I'm rooting for the last one remaining. Go Pat Mahomes.
Right. I feel like there is very little that is redeeming about the 49ers. Not because I particularly like care one way or the other about the 49ers, but between Jimmy Garoppolo, Mr. I'm going to throw the ball 7 times in a game or something like that, and Kyle Shanahan, I just, no.
I wonder if Shanahan gets up 28-3, if he'll have, like, a relapse of what happened to him the last time.
That would be hilarious. One thing I do know is that if Kansas City goes up 28-3, they will not be able to throw their way back into the game, so I'm not sure what they're going to do at that point. I want Andy Reid to get a Super Bowl because, frankly, he just needs to have one. Like, you know what? He just needs to have one. Like, he shouldn't not have one. I think that's really...
He has been too successful of a coach to not have a Super Bowl ring.
Especially when, like, people like Doug Peterson do have them. There are these random coaches that very early in their career got one who are would not consider a good coach. And I even wouldn't consider them a good coach. I don't know whether they're a good coach. You know what I mean? Like, they don't really know yet. Andy Reid is like one of the coaches that you're just like, you have to get one, period.
I think there are quite a few Seminoles that also play for the Kansas City Chiefs that I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that's always a good reason to root for a team. I feel like other than the fact that the Eagles were playing against the Patriots, they had like 4 Seminoles on the team at the time, which meant I was going to root for them. So go. And also, let's be really real. The Chiefs stole the war chant and the tomahawk chalk.
They lucky that the marching chiefs didn't send them a cease and desist.
I mean, I feel like the marching chiefs should be getting paid. I don't know why. I don't know how FSU is not getting paid for the Chiefs using that. I mean, I guess technically it's just music and they can play it, but didn't the Seahawks pay Texas A&M for the 12th man? I guess they use an actual like collateral.
Yeah, and it's not like I've heard the Chiefs play the war chant like during a game, and it sounds just like
it's like they literally pulled the CD out and play it. Like before all of this, I was gonna the Chiefs did post it because I mean this year the Super Bowl is in Miami, so you could definitely bring you know the marching Chiefs down to play in the stadium, and they're used to playing in that stadium, and they're used to being loud enough to make it to broadcast. It would be much better.
I feel like the Chiefs also need to ask some Florida State students or alumni to teach them how to do the tomahawk chop properly, because all the clips that I've seen of people doing it, like, yo, y'all, you're going to have a J-Lo Shakira halftime show, which I guess.
Sure. J-Lo still got snubbed. I didn't even see Hustlers and she got snubbed by the Oscars. And J-Lo's going to put all of us, make all of us feel like we should be doing way more because at like 50, she...
I heard she's bringing Ja Rule in for a surprise, which I don't think anybody's seen Ja Rule in like 15 years.
I cannot. I'm just interested to see how many times the broadcast can talk about the 49ers and the last time they were in the Super Bowl without mentioning the fact that Colin Kaepernick was their starting quarterback at the time. That is something that I feel like needs to be part of a drinking game.
But yeah, so I guess let's have a good Super Bowl, and you know, we wish We wish we could be more positive about the Super Bowl, but, you know, yeah.
Real people. Not to say that they're not real people, but they're the land of the living. This one hit us all hard. And hopefully...
On that note...
Hug your friends, clear stupid beefs, hug your kids, tell people you love them, be kind to one another.
And whatever you do, have that Mamba mentality. As Kobe likes to say, Mamba out.